Hey team, welcome back to the show. Today it is Coach Andrea and I once again with part 5 of the Building Phase for Women series. In this episode, we're going to be talking about tracking your progress and making adjustments in a building phase. So really so far, we've talked about setup as far as training, nutrition. Now we're going to be digging into and even like biofeedback, what's important to look into there. Now we're going to be talking through how do we make adjustments. So Andrea, first, can you talk us through why is this important?
Yeah. So tracking your progress, it's essentially like tracking your macros or tracking your weight whenever you're in fat loss. I like the saying, what gets measured gets managed, because it's just a really concise way of saying like, this is the way that we can make sure that we are doing the things that we need to do to get the best results.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think it's so easy to, again, a lot of times, even when we're working with a client, something I always express is, hey, this starting point is kind of just our best guess, right? So within that, there will very likely need to be adjustments made. The magic of coaching isn't like, hey, we're right away, we know exactly what you need. It is very much looking at how your body is responding. And then the adjustments we make from there are really where the magic lies. Or I talk with so many clients who have come from other coaches who previously, when like they weren't making progress, didn't adjust things where we should. Now, this is a fine line, because also I think it's easy to like, well, my coach should be adjusting my meal plan or my training program or whatever every week. The goal also isn't just to make unnecessary adjustments. If you are making good progress, adjusting things for the sake of adjusting things will actually probably hurt your progress. So that's important to consider here as well. But we do need to measure how you're progressing and adjusting and adjust accordingly. Anything else on that?
Yeah, I mean, if like you said, the initial plan is basically a best guess of where we'll need to be, and then we dial it in from there. If you're not gaining at all or you're losing weight, then you're going to be cutting your progress way short in a build phase. And if you are gaining too much, then you're going to just end up gaining more body fat than is needed. So the measuring things and make tracking progress, that's going to make sure that we are gaining mostly muscle and not have like ending up with so much body fat to cut down or way less muscle than we needed to. So
absolutely. Okay. So what are the main metrics of progress we're looking at in a building phase?
The first one's going to be making sure that we're progressing in the logbook. So improving performance in the gym over time, especially on those metric based lifts. So like compound movements, the ones where we talked a few weeks back about, measuring your progress in the gym and how the metric based movements are the compound lifts, where we can expect to see pretty consistent, not every single week, of course, but consistent over time improvement in the weight lifted. So we want the logbook to be progressing. Biofeedback, we want to make sure that just stays good. So how is energy, digestion, sleep, mood, all of those things. We want to just make sure that those are in a good place overall. And whenever those, I know we'll talk about this, so I don't need to go too far into it, but if those go off, that could be a sign that we need to deload or we need to make adjustments into something. Progress pictures. So obviously in a building phase, progress pictures aren't going to change incredibly quickly like they will in a fat loss phase. But you can assess over time, are we staying fairly lean? Are we gaining too much fat? What's happening in pictures? Basically, we just want to keep an eye there. And then measurements. These are tricky because they're going to be different for everyone. I've had different people both making great progress in their building phase, progressing the logbook, feeling really great, scale going up in the right time. But some their measurements will be staying the same through the midsection, going up everywhere else, which is the ideal, I guess. And then others where there's just not that much change in measurements, or they're just kind of fluctuating up and down over time, but both making great progress and seeing visual change, especially after we get into that fat loss phase later on. So measurements, while they are important to keep an eye on over time, it's not something that I have very strict expectations of. We just don't want the at like limbs getting smaller and midsection getting bigger. Like that's a pretty bad sign. But beyond that, I don't have too much of an expectation there.
Yeah, again, it's really an ecosystem of all these different things. Like the biofeedback that's important here, we've talked through quite extensively in the last few episodes. That logbook progression, that is going to be a very important aspect of this. Now, we also want to make sure your execution is in a good place. We're still getting like a good amount of disruption in the target tissue. Where it is easy also to just like let your form get sloppier and sloppier, or your cutting range of motion shorter and shorter, and that's why you're progressing. That's not what we want. But we do want to see logbook progressing. Progress pictures, again, they're going to vary from person to person. Typically in like that lean building phase that we chatted about, that's where you will oftentimes see physique improve. Whereas if we're truly in a building phase where we're gaining some body fat as well, oftentimes progress pictures will just look a little bit worse as a whole. You might look a little bit bigger until we go through a subsequent fat loss phase. But that biofeedback is very important. Like how's their sleep? How's their energy? How's their digestion? What would be an example of like, hey, I'm seeing this thing in biofeedback, and because of this, I need to make an adjustment.
So for example, if all of a sudden digestion has been great and there have been no food changes, and all of a sudden we're super bloated or we have loose stools or something like that, and sleep has gotten worse, maybe there's some achiness, that's a pretty good sign that it's time for a deload. And there's just a little bit too much stress overall on your system. And so a deload is a very quick and easy way to bring that stress level down. Mm-hmm. And then usually after that week of a deload, or even sometimes less, like just a couple training sessions off, then we can get back to it and feel really good.
Okay. I think that's a perfect example. So how do we know whether we should increase, decrease, or keep calories the same? I know this is a listener question that was asked quite frequently.
So first thing is, how are we feeling and how is the scale moving? So do we have plenty of energy? Are we feeling well fed, not really, really hungry between meals? A little bit of hunger leading up to the next meal is fine and normal, even in maintenance or a surplus, but there shouldn't be a ton of hunger if your food selection looks good. And is in a surplus build, is the scale moving up over time at some rate? So we don't want to be losing weight. If any of those aren't where they should be, then we should probably make an increase in calories. If the scale is moving up too quickly, so this is tricky too, because in the short term, the scale will do some wild things. So we might see 2 pounds within 1 week. The next week we might see that you drop a pound, or that you just increase by a tenth of a pound or something like that. So over the longer term, so over a month, let's say, if the scale is moving too quickly, let's say more than 2% per month, and that's consistent, then that might be a situation where we either need to maybe increase steps slightly or decrease calories slightly.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect example. So then when we are adjusting macros, how do we go about adjusting those? What does that typically look like?
So most of the adjustments in a build phase are going to be coming from carbohydrates, because carbs are going to be the primary energy source. They're also going to be helpful for recovery more so than protein or fats. But there are some trace proteins in carb sources. So oats have like a couple grams of protein, for example. And so when you extrapolate that out across all of the foods that you're eating in the day, those trace proteins start to add up. So every 75 to 100 ish carbs that you add to the diet, you could also then make an increase of about 10 grams of protein to the goal in order to accommodate those extra trace protein sources that are coming in from carbs. But most of the adjustments are going to come from carbs. Once your fats are at about 0.4 grams per pound, or for women about 60 to 70 grams in a day, we probably won't need to make too many increases in fats, but every once in a while, we might, if carbs are sufficiently high, we might increase through fats just for the sake of digestion. Once you're really full from all your food, then fats are so much more dense that it's easy to get more calories in through fats. And so with a very little food volume, so that's an easy way of getting more food in. Or just for personal preference and making it easier to get that amount of food in, because fats make your food taste good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But basically, we're typically going to have, again, a baseline level of protein, a baseline level of fats. So typically, like whether we're increasing or decreasing, a lot of times that will be coming from carbs. But again, once we get to the point where we might be really pushing food, then we might be a little bit more likely to add fats. And occasionally we'll bump up protein a little bit more to make sure that trace proteins, like lower quality proteins, aren't taking up too much of our protein intake. Anything else to add there?
Do you want to get into food selection?
Yeah, sure. Take it away.
So with one common mistake that I've seen is carrying over your habits from a fat loss phase, which to some extent can be good, but carrying those over to a build phase and then just feeling stuffed because you're eating a big bowl of salad greens and lots of broccoli and cauliflower, or using like cauliflower rice. And that's pretty quickly into a surplus going to start being uncomfortable. So yeah, in a build phase, we'll want to shift over toward things like rice or anything made out of rice. So cereal, rice cakes, cream of rice, all of that's great. We still want plenty of micronutrient dense foods in, but you could use things like bananas, blueberries, mango, zucchini, asparagus, those types of veggies that are pretty easy to digest versus the more cruciferous veggies that in larger quantities get a little bit harder to digest. Right. And you also want to really cook your veggies really well, because that's just so much easier to digest than something raw. So yeah, that's, and then with your protein sources, because you do have more fats coming in, you can afford to have more things like chicken thighs instead of chicken breast, or salmon instead of whitefish. So things like that, you have the room for now, and it's going to make it so much more enjoyable to eat that food versus having a huge volume of food that you've got to eat.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one thing that as we transition out of the deficit, it's not typically like the first thing that needs to change. But typically after a couple months of eating more food, you will need to shift towards less filling options as food continues to ramp up. So when we're talking training volume, again, number of hard sets per week, or as a whole training, not just training volume, but our training as a whole, how do we know whether we need to adjust this or keep it the same?
So if your exercise execution, intensity, your nutrition, your sleep, your stress management, if those are all good, and you've already included the intensifiers like drop sets and things like that that you want to include, then we would increase volume if recovery is good. So you're going into the next training session, or I should say after a training session, you're not experiencing much soreness for very long. Motivation to train is really high. Maybe you have stagnated in progressions in the logbook. You're not really seeing a lot of added strength over time. No pumps in the gym. So if those things are happening, and like I said, all of those other variables are already on point, you've already added the intensifiers, then that's where maybe we'll add a set to priority muscle groups to get things moving. And you can kind of afford to add that volume at that point. Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. We already talked about this quite a bit as far as like, when do we add volume? When do we add intensifiers in the training episode? I don't really think we have anything else to add in that regard. Do you?
Yeah, I guess we kind of covered that already.
Yeah. When we're talking about how do we determine if we need to decrease volume or deload, I would say more specifically deload, like what are signs you're looking for there that someone needs to deload? And then what does a deload typically look like?
Yeah. So we kind of touched on this a minute ago, where if you're all of a sudden your digestion goes bad or your joints are achy, your motivation to train is down, sleep becomes poor quality, or you're just not able to fall asleep, you're getting surges in your hunger, you're just generally not recovering very well, then that's where you would add a deload week. And how, so I'll do these one of a couple ways. One, just like a traditional volume where, or traditional deload where we cut the volume way down and we're doing like 2/3 of the sets that we would normally do. And we're keeping reps in reserve to like three or four, maybe a little bit higher. Another way that I'll do these is let's just take the next 2 to 3 training days off and then get back to it. So how I would decide that is if somebody just really loves that routine of going in the gym and they're going to feel off without doing that, then they'll go ahead and just do a traditional deload. If somebody really likes going for walks or riding their bike or other outdoor activities, or just is really busy and stressed and they could use that time elsewhere, then we'll just take 2 or 3 training sessions off and they can use that time to do other things or just de-stress in general.
Yeah. I a lot more frequently these days will use like, hey, we're just going to take 2 to 3 training days off versus having the, like, I think when I did pre-planned deloads, I would do a lot more like, okay, we're going to pull back to like 3 RIR here and everything. Whereas now I do a lot more frequently use, we're just going to take like 2 to 3 training days off. Yeah. How do we decide when to change movements? What are you typically looking at there when it's, you're adjusting a movement for a client?
So if a movement has stalled and we're not making strength progressions on it any longer, and that's been for 3 or 4 weeks or more, then usually my first step is adding an intensifier and adding like a drop set or something like that to get things moving. If that person has already done that, or let's say they're in a gym setting where they have plenty of other great options, then we'll just sub that movement for something new and they can start progressing on that. If someone's in a home gym, I'm a lot more stubborn about keeping the same movements in over time because there's just not that many great options.
Right.
Yeah. So another reason that you would sub a movement is, and this is going to be something that you notice pretty quickly, is like, does this cause pain? does this just not give you a great stimulus? Are you not feeling these very well in the target muscle? Which that's iffy too. Usually in that case, I'm going to look at execution and say, usually talk through, like, we don't have to feel a lot of burn in the muscle for this to be effective. Like if you're doing a glute bridge and everything looks really good, but you're not feeling your glutes a ton, your glutes are still going to be working because there's no real other way of doing that unless you're like my lower back or my hamstrings are on fire or something like that. So there is a limit to how much we care about the sensation that you feel, but in general, like that could be a reason to sub it out for a different movement that maybe you have a better connection with and you get a better pump or disruption with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think adjusting movements is definitely a fine line. Because a lot of times when it's just like a movement is getting hard to progress, that's honestly like when the easy progress on a movement stops and it is like hard and difficult to progress and we have to push ourselves pretty hard to do so. Honestly, that's like just the point where we're actually starting to build muscle tissue from the movement. So it's a mistake to like, okay, well, after 4 weeks, it's getting harder to progress, so I should just change. Typically, the less we can change things, the better. I will typically look at, again, if there's like pain with a movement and our execution is in a good place, our control is in a good place, hey, we don't want to sub this out. If someone is, we're really nailing the execution and intensity, and it has just been a very long period of time where, hey, we just don't see you getting the stimulus we want for whatever reason, this just isn't a good fit for that person, we might sub it out. And then at the end of a mesocycle, I will ask clients like, hey, any movements you're just absolutely so sick of, you don't want to continue to progress. And then even there, I'll look at, okay, well, can I just like change the rep ranges here? Or, do I need to actually plug in a different movement? But I think that's all I have on that. And I feel like the listener questions we all answered here pretty well. Anything else to add before we wrap this up?
No, do you need to go?
No, I mean, if there's any other thoughts, feel free to throw them in.
Okay. Yeah. So other things that we would, potentially adjust though. So like if somebody is stalled on a movement and there's not another really great option, and I still feel like we have more left to squeeze out of that movement before moving it to something different. Sometimes I'll adjust things like tempos or pauses in the movement. There's a limit to that. Like obviously like a 5, 6, 7 second eccentric isn't going to be more helpful, but if it is moving a little bit too quickly, I'll say, hey, let's slow this down to 2 to 3 seconds on the way down. And you're just going to get more out of this. Sometimes if it's a great movement and we've kind of hit a stall and we're at that point where we could sub it out, sometimes instead we'll just add a pause in the hardest position of that movement. And that can help improve the stimulus that you're getting from it and make it just a little bit different without having to relearn a whole new movement.
Yeah, there's quite a bit we can typically adjust there. Again, like going to adjusting the movement is typically the last thing.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is all we have for y'all for today. As always, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you guys next time.